before Trump got elected, I would say 85 to 90% of the chat was like MAGA. And it's like, yes, let's get Trump in office. And as a result, they were supportive of Elon, right? They were like, yes, Elon's amazing. I cannot believe how the chat has switched. And I would say it is now at least 50% of the couple thousand people we have live every morning saying, Elon, dude, he's a Nazi. He's the worst person in the world. Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm over here like, how did this switch? When did this happen? And maybe Tesla stock going down is getting some people pissed off. But in general, I'm curious your guys' perspective. I think the reaching of his heart to the crowd gesture really turned a lot of people off. And then the support of AFD in Germany really is turning a lot of people off. So what is your guys' perspective? I obviously have my opinions and I'll chime in as well. But how the hell did avid Elon MAGA supporters turn into Elon's a Nazi?
Well, yeah, can we ask a couple questions on the audience? So does it seem like consistent numbers from before to after? And do you think it's consistently the same people? Or is the audience changing? Or is it the sentiment of the exact same audience changing?
I would say we added a couple thousand more people since November. And so we definitely have some new faces that have shown up. But in general, the typical person who watches a finance stream, it's not a politics stream or a tech stream, they tend to be more conservative, right? They tend to want limited government, lower taxes, yada, yada. And that tends to lean in, at least with the Elon profile that he set up for himself over the past couple of years. And so I don't really think it's been a massive audience shift. My channel also probably is not being recommended to like the most liberal people in the world. YouTube has, you know, complex algorithms. They know people who care about finance would like my channel. But those are the people that I'm seeing that are like doing this 180 on Elon. And it's quite unexplainable to see how it's happening, but it's happening.
Yeah. So it's funny you mentioned that, because the one immediate shift. Yeah. I haven't seen that. I definitely see comments on my channel that are like, you know, towards like, he's a Nazi supporter now, I'm not going to support him, but they're very, very few and far between, at least for my content. I think your content is a lot more, it hits a lot of different niches and it goes out to a lot of different people. What I have noticed for sure is for the last couple of weeks, there's been an explosion of content specifically around, like, let's say left-leaning media, independent left-leaning media, that are going hard after Elon. They're going hard after Trump. And it's the usual framing of Nazi, dictator, blah, 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 fascist, you know, how dare they, so on and so forth. I think that there's a few things going on. I think what did Hans say the one day? There is he's an attention supernova, Elon is. So now, since going on MAGA, I think what's happened is it's opened the floodgates where now every single person on the planet is not on the planet, I should say that. Every person that would be paying attention to the story already is now.
Yeah.
Just simply because of being in the part of the most powerful administration on the planet. Like he is almost like a Trump's like sort of speaking person when it comes to Doge. It's always deferred to Elon, which is rare because Trump usually loves to hog in the mic. But when it comes to Elon, it's like, Elon, go ahead. And Elon's like, blah, blah, blah. And people are like, da, 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 da. And so I think, and hopefully that doesn't happen. Jesus Christ, that's like the worst thing of all time, right? But I'm saying figuratively. So what I think is happening is there is definitely a turnoff factor here that has happened, for sure. But I don't know if it's a small percentage of people that are being extremely vocal, right? And those are, because, you know, if you think about comments and when you think about content, they're rarely representative of the masses.
Yeah, 100%.
Even if you have gigantic pieces of content. But to say that there isn't a significant portion of the population that is unhappy with Elon like that right now specifically, I think that definitely is the case for sure. 1,000%. And I don't think Elon has helped himself in a lot of different ways. I think one of the things that Elon has the ability to do, because he's come from the left and now is with the right, and he's driving Doge as hard as he can, right? I think he's uniquely equipped to speak to the other side, especially given that his company is like, you know, a electric vehicle company. But right. The way I view it is that I think he is so existentially attached to Doge. And it sort of aligns with his usual thing. If you look at his history, he just is obsessed about the thing he's working on, that the other stuff that could be happening around it is not that I don't think he views that as a as a thing that will derail his ability to get what he wants done. And I think now that there's a ton of attention on it, it's not like, oh, just car fans, or it's just like EV fans, or it's just, you know, automotive fans or green energy fans. Now it's like everybody's paying attention, right? And the most vocal will always be the ones that have the most problem with the thing. It's very rare that when you have like supportive people or just neutral people, you're not going to hear from those people. You're going to hear from the people that are legitimately upset. Now, when it comes to him being a Nazi specifically, I think that is a very weak argument, you know, an extremely weak argument in a lot of different ways. But listen, Trump is extremely polarizing. Elon has hitched his wagon to a very polarizing figure. And by default, because of some of the things he's done in media that have been framed a certain way, now he's become polarizing. And so this is what it is. And now we're in this world of politics that is the most tribal thing of all time outside of sports. This is where you're going to get. And now the administration is going through a chaos period for sure. Who's just maybe going to be a chaos period for 4 years, right? But like we've done a 180 from the Biden administration being the least transparent, most opaque thing of all time. You know, Biden, how many times would Biden get in front of a camera? Once a year, it felt like?
Yeah, maybe.
We never knew what was going on. And now we're getting exactly the opposite. Now we're getting every hour, every 2 hours, a new thing. Bang, 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 bang. Of course, that's going to stir up a ton of discourse. Now, I think this is a good thing. In the whole, I think this is a great thing because it proves that we are in a world where free speech is alive and well. That's my takeaway here. Regardless of what you think of the individual, regardless of where you go, you're seeing a gigantic amount of discourse, a lot of differing opinions, a lot of tribal opinions, but they exist. And they exist on his own platform.
Yeah.
Right? This is a win. This is a win for society. We'll see if it's a win for Elon, but it's a win for society, regardless of where you stand on the tribal sort of the separation. Anyway, that's how I view it.
Yeah. So I think there are a couple of things here that are going on that are factors in how I understand it. First of all, like we've, you know, been around the Elon story arc for so long that we've seen many cycles of disruption. And there's always huge amounts of FUD from the parties that are standing to lose in a huge way on the other side of the disruption. So, you know, 2017, 2018, like all of the FUD that you would hear constantly from all sorts of mainstream legacy news sources about not only how EVs were bad for the planet or how, you know, Tesla was a terrible company that was going to go bankrupt and all that stuff. And so, like, there's this wall of FUD that I've come to expect anytime Elon is pressing on a very important thing that needs to be disrupted. And, you know, we saw that again with X, like, oh, X is going to die. He's going to kill the company. It's terrible that he's actually allowing free speech, like all this stuff. And so, especially as now to Farzad's point, like he's doing something that is disruptive on a national scale with something that has implications that touch literally every American's life. And then by extension, because America is one of the number one leading global powers, a lot of people in the world's lives, then this is going to be one of those areas where we're just going to get insane and intense FUD and pushback. So I expect this noisy environment. Like this is just part of the process of disrupting things. And then on the other, like Elon just doesn't, he has learned through all these cycles that I'm not going to necessarily spend a whole lot of time and energy in trying to debunk everything. I just am going to say, this is my perspective, and I just want to continue to collapse my communications down to these are the most important things that I believe. This is why we're doing it. This is where we're going. This is why it's important. And I'm just going to say those or amplify those things over and over and over and over again. And so, you know, on the one hand, you have like tons and tons of noise. And then on the other hand, you get a very simplified perspective. And so you'll hear Elon say or retweet or amplify, you know, pretty much the same 5 or 10 things over and over and over again. And it's because that's like this is how he understands, like, whatever the most important first principle is, that's a thing we're just going to lean hard into. And when he's doing something that's disruptive, it's just because he's leaning into a first principle truth and acting out of that. And that's kind of what carries him through the FUD thing. And then I think specifically in this case, one of the things that I have been worried about, but I know that Elon is getting into this arena knowingly, is that I was concerned that Trump would, you know, put Elon out in front as the human shield for a lot of these activities, and that Elon was going to take a lot of the heat and a lot of the arrows for these very controversial, very important policy changes, changes to government, changes to things where there's a lot of people that are going to lose a lot of money. There's a lot of people that are going to lose a lot of power. There's a lot of influence that is going to be completely shifted. And when you disrupt that, like, it's going to create not only the FUD, but legitimate real world, like, there's going to be legal ramifications. There's going to be all sorts of court cases that come out of this. There's safety threats, all this stuff. And I think Elon and Trump both knew that Elon was going to be the tip of the spear to actually have to hold up under all of that stuff. And that is something that I think he has the ability to do. But like, this is why you need things like X. This is why you need a giant fortune. This is why you need the chops and the credibility that come with, I've done impossible things over and over and over again. I've literally never failed at a disruptive endeavor in my life. That gives him the skill set and the credibility and the resources to go out front on something like this and weather the storm and hopefully succeed, because, you know, in his mind, this is existential for the country. And by extension, this is potentially existential for the global world order. And all those things are prices that he's willing to pay, because ultimately a better functioning democracy, a better functioning environment for innovative businesses to execute on their goals is necessary if we want to do the cool and exciting things that we want to do moving forward, whether that's colonizing Mars or having a society where humanoid robots mean that we don't have to do work that we don't want to do, or, you know, changes with Neuralink and being able to give people back their ability to see or hear or use their body after they've been in accidents and been paralyzed. All these things like need a specific environment in order to be possible, and preserving that environment or returning to that environment or strengthening that environment to a level that it's never been possible before is something that is worth all of the pain and suffering and arrows that come along with trying to bring it to pass.
What do you think, Amit?
Yeah, I agree. I'm just trying to take it from first principles, right? Because I'm getting a lot of perspectives every day from my audience. And what I see Elon trying to do is basically say, we have a lot of money that we are in debt. We need to cut costs. I don't know how any Democrat or Republican could disagree with that. Like, it's just, it is. And I'm trying to get the perspective on why they disagree with it. And the main argument I get is that he's an unelected official. And that's where my subjective belief comes in, which is like, well, all the elected officials for the past 100 years have done nothing to resolve this debt problem. And we know they're not incentivized to do it. Elon, quite frankly, one of the reasons he's incentivized is because there is no Tesla, there is no SpaceX if the country fails. And the path we're going on, it is very obvious. This $36 trillion will become $50 trillion in the next, I think the estimate I saw was 7 years. Like, it's just unsustainable. And I think he knows that. I don't think he has that much to gain personally outside of his company surviving. But it's not like there's some big monetary win he gets because he's buddy-buddy with Trump. And maybe I'm naively saying this, but I genuinely think he wants to help save the country because he's Elon and he wants to save the world. He wants to get on Mars. Like, why wouldn't he want to save the country? So from that perspective, I'm like, okay, what Doge is doing makes sense. The concern from the left is that he's an unelected official. I don't think that makes a lot of sense. And so then the concern becomes, is
Elon... And I also think that's rich coming from the party who had a completely unelected cabinet around Biden. Like, the president that was elected was not actually doing anything.
Yeah. Yeah. That's insane. It's insane. So, like, I'm trying to be sympathetic to the counter side. And then it devolves into the what Farzad was talking about, these ad hom, he's a Nazi type of attacks, because they know logically... There are other arguments that make sense. So Pod Save America, that's a pretty pretty famous podcast on the left. I try to listen to them and get their perspective. These guys are like ex-Obama White House people. And I mean, it seems like they're just coming up with a narrative to try to hate on Elon more and more and more. Yesterday, I think their episode was that Elon wants everyone's social security information so he can beef up the training data for Grok. And I'm like, are you motherfuckers like actually retarded, bro? Like, do you guys understand what a large language model, like, you guys are like, and I'm just like, oh, so that's the narrative they're running with to come up with their Elon hate because of how much they hate Trump. And I'm just like, as someone who tries to be super logical, not biased, we need to cut our deficit spending. We need to get the 10-year treasury to come down. In order to do that, we need something like Doge. So
yeah.
I think it makes sense what he's doing. I just really don't know how the story is going to play out because of how much hate he's getting every single day.
Yeah. I'm happy you said that, because I've been trying to go through that same journey. I'm trying to watch content from the left side of the political aisle to try and understand their legitimate concerns about what's going on. And like you, the one that I constantly hear that could have hold some water is like, well, he's got too much power being a special government official or employee or whatever. And he has a ton of conflict of interests because he has companies that are part of a bunch of, like, SpaceX is in defense, Tesla is in transportation. He just shouldn't be a government employee. Like, he shouldn't be doing what he's doing. I'm like, okay, cool. So let's say that's true. Are we sure, number one, are we sure that 100% of the people that were unelectedly in everyone's cabinet, like Hans said, and the surrounding thing of the people that we voted in, are we sure none of them had conflict of interests, number one? And number two, if he did have conflict of interest, are we sure that he's not recusing himself from those things? He may have put the team together, but those people are going in, right? I think what it really comes down to is it's just trust. It's a trust issue. It's just tribalism. It's 100% tribalism. If the left side of the political aisle, if Kamala and Elon were together, I bet you the same exact people that are going batshit crazy would be like, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. We have the greatest engineer in the world looking at government from a first principles perspective. How could you not like this? But it's Trump. So now it's like, well, they're doing this for personal gain because billionaire bad. And you can't trust a billionaire because they're out there to enrich their pockets. And this is why I want Elon to go on The Daily Show.
So I saw that yesterday. That was really cool. And if it happens, you're going to get all the credit for making this happen. But I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Is Jon Stewart someone you still respect?
I don't think he comes from a evil perspective. I don't think he is somebody that will... I just don't think he's a bad person. I disagree with...
I don't either, but his takes sound awfully similar to Rachel Maddow. And I'm listening to them, and I'm like, this guy's too smart for this type
of stuff. But this is my point. So this is my point. Let's even say that's the case. We can't be a country where we are in a position to have a unique piece of discourse that could materially change the direction of the country just because we think those people are thinking about everything completely wrong, right? We can't do that. And honestly, I need to start really embracing that and start getting people on the channel that I'm 180 degrees away from.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I need to start doing that myself. I need to speak, you know, I need to put the money where my mouth is, right? But the reason why I like the Elon going on Daily Show so much is because now Elon is in a position of power with a lot of influence. He is an entire media corporation. He is the most popular influencer in the world, right? And then Daily Show, you have somebody like Jon Stewart that has, in my opinion, has traditionally done a very good job of speaking truth to power, of actually identifying things that are fundamentally wrong from an incentives perspective and bringing those forward.
But that's my point. John Stewart is too smart to be having the takes that he's having. And I don't think he cares anymore about, like, if he sat down with Elon for an hour and Elon broke down in first principles why, like, Doge is necessary and why, even if he's unelected, it's an important thing for him in particular to be leading it. I don't think it would change his mind. Like, do you?
I don't care about changing minds, but I'm not here to change minds. I'm here to just have the conversation. Just put it out there. It could change someone else's mind. It could change, like, as somebody who's kind of on the fence, on trying to understand, okay, this is my whole point of, like, trying to find the middle. We are so far apart on the extremes, right? Like, where is the middle? The only way to find the middle is for, it's like, somebody has to take a step on either side and come together. Or somebody, because I would argue, like, is Elon being centrist right now? I would probably say no. I think he is, and I don't blame him, because for the last 4 years, the Biden administration has been fucking him. And that is not something that somebody could argue. Publicly, he was getting disparaged for absolutely no reason. And I think he took that shit to heart and he's like, fuck you, I'm coming after you now. It's a revenge tour of sorts, right? It's a revenge tour. And so because of the violence that he's going after and his chaotic nature, I'm not surprised that you get the type of comments that you get on the other side, because you're going to create an immune response to somebody who feels slighted. And when you're somebody as powerful as Elon feeling slighted and going after the system, the people who think you are actually there to do it for yourself, they get mobilized. And so we shouldn't be surprised by the amount of attention he's getting on the other side.
I agree. And I think the conversation would be good. My point is just, Jon Stewart is someone who has influence, and people take his opinion and they internalize it. And they, like,
yeah,
like, if he says something, they believe in what he says. If you're an avid Daily Show viewer for the past 20 years, that's how you think.
Just like Elon.
My skepticism is if Jon Stewart can get out of the bubble that he's in, because he hates the Trump administration just as much as any of the anyone else on the left. And if Elon tells him to his face why this makes sense, I wonder if he would then tell his millions of fans, yeah, guys, we should start liking Elon. Or would that ruin the content that he probably has lined up for the next 4 years? All these late night talk show, Jimmy Kimmel, like, they all thrive. They love that Trump's in office because they thrive on the ratings they can get from hating on him. I've lost faith that Jon Stewart actually gives a shit. I think he doesn't care anymore.
I think there's another dimension of the calculus too for Jon Stewart. Like, I think that these hosts, and Jon Stewart's a great example, because he has one of the greatest moments in all of network TV history.
Yes.
But
one of the very few people that was willing to stand up from that side of the political spectrum. And he did it on national television in front of everybody.
Which is why I have so much respect for him as well. Right?
Exactly. For people who aren't understanding what we're talking about, him going on with Stephen Colbert and saying that the Wuhan Institute of Virology was almost 100% certainly the source of the coronavirus, like, the Wuhan coronavirus lab was the source of the Wuhan coronavirus. That broke open the Overton window. And the thing that most people thought was most likely, but could not say, all of a sudden, in an instant, it was okay for everyone to finally say the thing that was, you know, blatantly obvious. And he was the, you know, everyone knew that. It's not like he was a revolutionary figure in understanding this obvious fact. He just happened to be the person who allowed that opinion to be publicly, inside the bounds of okay discussion. And so, yeah, that was a crazy moment. But I think that these people, like, I think you have basically a budget of, like, challenges to the approved narrative that you can spend. You only get so many when you live inside of cable news television. There's a narrative that you're supposed to build up and hold up. And there's only so many, like, deviations or explorations outside of that you're allowed in order to keep yourself in good standing inside the organization. And this is how, when you don't do that, you end up getting fired like Tucker Carlson.
So let me reframe the question. Why is Jon Stewart against Doge? Given how logical the guy is, like, why would anyone? So
my question in return is, how do we know he's against Doge?
But isn't that his take? He's
what he says publicly and what he thinks personally.
No, he's for Doge. I mean, he is for the concept of Doge, but his framing was you're going after the wrong stuff. You should be going after the rot in with how large corporations are basically getting tax benefits that don't matter and how they're propping up pharma companies and stuff like that. This whole thing is like, yeah, we should be going after corruption, but you're going after the wrong corruption. That was my takeaway from his take, right?
But so, you think Elon's going after the wrong corruption?
No, I don't.
That's what I'm saying. There's a disconnect.
This is my point.
Bro. There's a weird disconnect here.
That's why they should talk.
Yeah.
That's why they should talk. This is my point. It's like just because, and again, we could be wrong too. Listen, the three of us could be idiots that are just we have the fire hose of MAGA propaganda that we're just swallowing, and we think we're thinking, but they've rewired our brain with propaganda to think that we're right. There is a percentage chance that's true. We've been infected
by the disinformation.
Yeah. We've been infected by the anti-woke virus. By the anti-woke mind virus, right? I mean, any host of possibilities could be true. What I know for a fact, though, is that when a piece of content is an unmitigated banger, you do that. And to me, Elon Musk going on Jon Stewart's Daily Show and doing an hour unedited podcast is a unmitigated banger piece of content, right? And I think it's a piece of content that could open the eyes of a lot of people and actually make some legitimate progress towards getting this thing to be accepted by more than just one side of the political aisle. Because ultimately what we need is Doge everywhere. This can't be like a federal program for the next 2 years. This needs to be federal, state, local forever. Did you know, Amit, did you know if you take the federal, state, local budgets and you add all the NGOs, okay, you know what percentage of our GDP is directly tied to those entities? Federal, state, local, government operations, all their administrative stuff, all the suppliers, everything around it, plus the NGOs. What percentage of the US GDP is that? Take a wild guess.
Wild guess, I'm going to say 32%.
48%.
Wow.
Why?
That's half of our GDP.
Why? Why?
Yeah. Because there's no forces constraining them.
Exactly.
Things grow as big as you'll let them.
They can keep
spending. We have let them.
Federal, state, and local is 32%. If you add the NGOs, it's 48%.
Goodness, dude. That's a lot.
Yeah. So this is like, exactly. Like, and we're sitting here, it's like, how can you hate Doge? Let him go. We need the hammer. Get the hammer. This is fucking crazy. We have the debt and we have a GDP where half of our money is wasted on bullshit that is super ineffective, super inefficient. And just because it exists doesn't mean it's good. We need to get it to work good. This is a conversation that needs to be had. It's not being had. It's only being had on one side of the political spectrum. And the last thing you want is half the country or half the voting base or half the support system to be vehemently against that. That's the problem. It's that we're not opening doors. These doors should be open. And that's the thing. That's the thing I've realized in the last couple of weeks is that I think it's on Trump and Elon to open the doors. And I get it. I get it. Troll, go out there, have fun, have humor. But where is that like? Dude, Trump should go on Maher. Trump should go on Bill Maher's show. Elon should go on Jon Stewart's show. J.D. Vance does interviews with the opposite side all the time. Take that model and apply it everywhere. Dude, like, this is such a unique time in history that we can make so much change by having some groundbreaking discourse. It's ripe for this. Freedom of speech is alive and well. Content, the amount of banger content you can generate from this is absolutely ridiculous. And this is what people watch now. This is how people get informed. They watch content. News doesn't exist anymore, really. It's content. So make content. Am I being naive? Tell me.
You're not being naive, but I just feel like there is a split between Democrats and Republicans where Elon is only doing bad. And, you know, Jon Stewart believes that some parts of it are good, but he's not believing the other parts are good. Whereas in my head, I'm like, he should be going after everything because we've had so much corruption. I don't know how this turns out, dude. All I know is that Elon has enough power to get shit done, but there are plenty of people on the other side that are trying to take away that power as soon as they can. And if they do, if this administration doesn't solve the debt, or at least create a framework to try to solve the debt, I don't know which administration ever will. Right?
I agree. And Elon and Trump will have a permanently stained reputation moving forward that will be unrepairable because they came in, they caused chaos, and they didn't deliver.
Yeah,
and they caused chaos very publicly. Right. So this is where execution is absolutely paramount. But the problem is here is that if you want to execute, you have to have the will of the people behind you. You have to have the country behind you, because now you are in government. Elon is a politician and he's doing the opposite to create sort of like buy-in on this thing. Like, the three of us understand what he's doing. The three of us, like, we have enough trust in the guy based on previous experience and the execution and how he's treated his customers and investors. Like, we understand how the guy operates, even if it feels absolutely chaotic for most people. But none of us are going to make that change, or none of us are going to help people understand potentially what's going on, or at least help them like find the information to go on their own journey, right? Unless stuff like that happens. It's just going to get more and more divided, because you're going to allow the discourse to be driven by the extremes. And you the only way to stop that is to have the representatives from the quote unquote extremes come together and start talking.
I think it is going to be really difficult for them to figure out the right balance between, like, because communicating and executing, you know, both take time. And they definitely need to spend, to your point, the majority of their time executing and getting the things done. 99% done right.
Yeah. For sure.
And so it's like, but they do need to communicate. And just the question is how much and with whom. Getting into those centers of discourse for the other side, I think, would be an incredible way. Like, that's the maximum leverage point where you could actually get the most information out to the most people. I guess one of the dynamics that I've noticed just in my personal circles around here, which this is much more conservative land, Texas, that a lot of people who I've had conversations with about Elon over the years, who always thought, Hans and that crazy Elon guy, man, like, we like Hans okay. I don't know about Elon. He's kind of weird freak dude, and I don't know if I can trust him, and blah, blah, government blah. Like, all of a sudden, like, so many of those people are like, hey, dude, Elon, he's so awesome. Yeah. Like, we love that guy. He is the best now. Like, so, you know, I think we have mobilized a section of the population who now loves him just as much as we see this other very noisy section that has been mobilized and hates him. And so it's not, you know, just a one-sided dynamic that's going on either.
Yeah. He lost one extreme for the other.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. But the thing here now is, like, and I think we talked about this before too, is like, before politics a thing, the extreme that hated him wasn't really thinking about him that much, because he is in EV land. Yeah. So they're not activated, right? Now that he's in politics land, the positive is activated and they're all on X. Every single one of them is on X. And all the ones that hate him are everywhere else. But the pool, the net number of people that are now activated is 1,000 times larger than it was before politics. That's what we're seeing. That's my hypothesis.
What do you think about the new baby mama?
I don't even spend any time thinking about it, honestly. It's, for me, in my opinion, the baby gets fucked out of this whole thing. Yeah. This is as a brand new father, it's like, okay, like, I have my own opinions. I don't want to talk about them because I feel like it's a waste of time. It's an unfortunate situation, period.
Yeah. It compounds on the whole Elon narrative, right? It's just,
This is my point of, like, chaotic neutral. You know, chaotic neutral, which means that you open the interpretation for good and bad, right?
No, it means that there is some good and some bad. Like, there are things that happen that end up being wildly good, and then there are some things that are like, ooh, that's really funky and messed up. Yep. But, like, it kind of nets out.
Yeah, which is also what happens when you have a creative genius. I mean, it's not going to be perfect, right? There's going to have to be some trade-offs here and there. Are you guys, given you're deep in the Tesla community, getting a lot of pushback now that the stock has taken a nasty turn? And how are you thinking of the stock right now?
Not really. I mean, I from my standpoint, is like, I think people have lived through so many ups and downs. I mean, I do see the comment from time to time is like, Elon is breaking the stock again. I'm like,
do you think he is? Market.
I think there is some fears out there that the heavy involvement in the politics arena and some of the image stuff is impacting sales more than they have in the past. And I personally think there might be some of that in the short to medium term, that is more significant than previous because of how the masses that have come forward now that are like saying evil person, right? Now, again, I don't know what percentage of the population that is. I don't know what percentage of the population in the US, Europe, globally make a purchasing decision based on their moral compass. Truly. If that was the case, then companies like Amazon, when Jeff Bezos, evil billionaire, sweatshop runner, evil person, people still order from Amazon. Apple, oh my God, Chinese slave labor, people jumping off the roofs, terrible, the worst thing ever, cobalt in the phone, slave kids in the Congo, you are evil. Okay, people still buy, 50% of the market share is Apple, right? So I can't quantify it, I think it's legitimate. I think it's
going to get overblown right now because we're in this season of Q1 changing over to Model Y. So like sales are going to be way down in Q1 because we're changing over the biggest, most consequential, most volume vehicle line in the entire company.
That's so much noise.
Yeah, so we're going to see huge sales. And then it seems like the narrative is that all this drop in sales is Elon bad, Nazi, therefore sales go down. And I think that the impact of his image is going to be, small single digit percentage of impact of just we're changing over the lines right now. And so I think we are going to be going through, one of those narrative FUD seasons where it's just awful. But I love those seasons as far as an investor. Like, to me, these are the generational buying opportunities, like loading up on leaps in the 200s. Are you kidding me? Heck yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the lens that I look at this through. I know that other people are going to see things differently, but that's where I've learned we're in the seesaw cycle, and it's kind of, it's always darkest before the day. And I think that's where we're at, that we're launching into a phase of the company where the product that we're going to be selling is aimed at the broadest possible consumer base at the lowest possible price point. And you know who doesn't care about politics when they're making purchasing decisions? People who have to make their decisions based solely on what can I afford. And that is the new target market. It's way bigger than the old target market, and it will be won or lost solely on economics. And the foundation is laid to win in dramatic fashion on economics. And so all this other stuff is kind of just short-term noise as long as we're executing on those things. So that's why I just continue to look at, like, version 13 looks awesome. Even 13.2.8 looks just even more awesome than 13.2.6. 12.6.3 on my hardware 3 car is amazing. And we just keep getting better and better and better. People don't appreciate the fact that this technology is riding an exponential curve, and it's going to continue to get better faster. All of the fundamentals of solving FSD are in place. Once FSD is in place, we're launching into Optimus, and these are going to be two of the most consequential developments in technology of the decade. And Tesla is at the very forefront on both. So yeah, that's looking at the long picture, I'm really excited about where the company is. And all of the talk about Elon's personal image, Elon's personal image is going to have zero bearing on the success of the robotaxi network or the economic demand for Tesla Optimus robots. He could be the most hated person in the world, and companies are still going to buy Optimus robots in mass if it saves them money and helps them do business better. So, that's where just knowing what your focus is really helps to sort out, how much you're getting thrown away or getting tossed about by the the current sentiment of the day, and it helps to make those buying opportunities more apparent in the moment.
What do you think, Amit?
Yeah, I agree. So I got a chance to visit Figure AI's headquarters a couple weeks ago in California, and my thesis from that was that I think humanoid robots are coming faster than we expected. I think Figure will be successful, but obviously Tesla has the vertical integration, the manufacturing, the scale. So if Figure is seeing demand in the tunes of billions, Tesla's definitely going to be seeing that demand in the tunes of tens of billions. And when that happens, like, I don't know how Wall Street's going to be able to interpret that. And you guys have covered the humanoid story so well over the past couple of really years at this point. I think the bots are coming. I think July or June, we have unsupervised in Austin. If that works, it'll keep expanding. And then if by the end of 2025, Elon can show any commercial client that wants to put in a LOI for Optimus, or at least the beginning of 2026, we see that, then yeah, dude, I think the stock gets completely re-rated. I think the stock is much higher than $292.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think the most fascinating thing about the time now is there's a clear separation of stories happening between Musk industry and Musk politics, right? Musk industry has never been more well-positioned. It is unbelievable that, like, I think there were very few people, not even a year ago, that were sold on the idea that robotaxis were actually coming for Tesla, because the progress seemed so linear and not fast enough. And now that tune has changed completely. There are very few people I talk to now that are like, oh yeah, this is not going to happen. Because they've been in the car, they're like, oh yeah, no, this is totally going to happen. This is totally going to happen, for sure, right? So I think that's the most fascinating thing, is like Tesla specifically, that story is so well positioned for a multi-trillion dollar market cap in the next couple of years. It's so obvious. Not financial advice, but it looks extremely obvious to me. The question becomes, how big of a distraction, and will there be a permanent event that could derail that from happening, right? And from a business perspective. And then if you look at it from the Musk side, okay, what does this mean for legacy? What does this mean for influence? What does this mean for power? What does this mean for image? So on and so forth, right? Talent, being able to draw talent. Is this hurting any of that stuff? That's the stuff that's a little bit murky right now because of just how much attention is on the story. But I think all of this doesn't matter if Doge executes. If the government can actually lower its deficit, and we're at the point where we've balanced the budget and the government is clearly more efficient and more effective, I think this becomes a gigantic win, like beyond anything that anybody could imagine. I think if the wins of Doge flow down to the individual taxpayer and they see it as lower taxes, cheaper prices at the store, lower interest rates, a more responsive government, an easier to interface government, better healthcare, better results, this is a runaway train in the best way possible that anybody could imagine. So execution is first and foremost, but some of my worries are the execution might be hampered by his ability to get buy-in from the other side, because ultimately Congress and everywhere else needs to adopt this long term for this to actually be the case.
I'm bullish on Tesla. I'm bullish on Elon. I'm bullish on the US, but it is pretty fascinating to see. Okay, well, let me ask this question. The pseudo-Nazi salute. What was your guys' take on that?
Autistic.
That's what I thought. I didn't think it was a Nazi salute. I thought it was like a little awkward.
And the people,
a couple,
you know,
times, I could understand how people think of, but he's not a fucking Nazi. Like,
yeah, I think people that think it was a Nazi salute, when they hear me say that, they'll be like, "You're the most evil person in the world. Like, how dare you say that this clearly?" And then the next day, he's hanging out with Bibi Netanyahu, right? And a few of his baby mamas are, I believe, are Jewish. Like, okay, so like how? And like, you know, he went to Israel. He's, you know, people in Israel seem very happy with the Tesla. His companies are the most diverse of any companies I've ever been to. There's people from all creeds and colors. Like, I don't know. Just, you know, it's silly. I mean, it's silly tribal stuff that works in this media climate. And it goes back to our initial discussion. It's like tribalism exists for a reason. It's because we're wired to be for our brains to react to certain things in a certain way because of how it like makes our feelings vibrate.
Yeah.
You know? it's very difficult, and it's especially difficult to remain objective and neutral and perceive what the reality actually is in times like these. Because again, I could be wrong. You know, that's the hardest thing about these times is like you're constantly doubting yourself if you're actually barking up the wrong tree, because what you don't think is true is so loud and it's so big and it's so easy to get access to that information, right? So it creates doubt constantly. But
yeah, that was my take on it as well. But every time, you know, I kind of stick up for him a little bit, everyone's just like, he's a Nazi. I'm like, now you guys just think it's cool to call someone a Nazi. Like at this point, it's tribal, as you're saying.
How so? Do you think that there is I'm really curious to get your take. Like, are you seeing a way out of this? Do you think that, like, I'd be really curious to see what it's like next month. Like, yeah. Is this just a fad? Is this just like, I mean, could this just be like, you know, people online just talking shit? Or is it like a legitimate concern? Like, is it a serious, serious thing? Or, you know, like 0.1% of me, my conspiracy theory part of me is like, okay, this is how you create true doubt. Is you go into the channels where you know the attention is,
yeah, right?
And you start sprinkling a little bit of bot stuff going on. I doubt it. I really don't think it's that. But I mean, I have to think about that too. I'm like, okay, so like how could there be such a sudden shift on something that seems so not that? And it could just be politics. It could just be tribalism, you know?
Well, winning cures all, right? So Doge has already saved $80 billion or some crazy number, right? If that turns into a trillion, which is what Elon thinks we can get to by the end of 2026, then I don't know, dude. I think the American people will thank him eventually, even if they're not thanking him right now.
Yeah. Execution is the most important part. If they execute, I think he will go down as a goat for sure. But this is by far the most perilous. Did you have something you want to hit, Amit, since you've been asking this? God damn it. You know what we do a really bad job of, Hans? Every time Amit is on, he is so good at asking questions and getting conversations started that he just flips it. It's like, this should be like the Amit show.
It's good. I enjoy it because this is when I get educated from two people that are tapped into Elon and Tesla. And it's just fun to pick your guys' brains because you guys are now, I mean, for the next 4 years, given where Elon has positioned himself, it's just unlimited things to talk about. You know, I would imagine it gets like, oh, you're kind of figuring out, all right, what do we talk about today? Because every single day he's putting stuff out. And who knows, maybe he's going to be with Jon Stewart because of you, Farzad.
Well, it's the separation of the stuff that actually should be talked about versus the stuff that is more like you can tell it's just like political stuff that's happening. Like that's and the goal here, I think, for us is like to be truly as objective and neutral as we can be. Like and it's very, very difficult because people on the other side will say, let's say on the other side, like the left side will say, you guys are clearly just being unexcusable supporters of this thing. And it's like, I don't think that's the right framing to look at this. I think the right framing to look at this is the debt, 42% of the country is obese, anxiety and depression is through the roof. We're in freaking endless wars constantly. The middle class hasn't grown at all. It's very difficult to be an entrepreneur in this country versus previous years. There's endless regulation. The IRS is run by lawyers. There's some fundamental broken stuff about our government. And nothing has worked for the last 60, 50 decades, or years rather, five, six decades. Something has to happen. And that's the pragmatic, realistic approach that at least I'm trying to take on this channel, right? As Amit's freaking camera dies. And he's like, I had enough.
Every time it dies, I know it's like, oh, okay, that's all right. At least we have this. All right. Here.
Yeah. Go ahead,
Hans. So, yeah, the other thing in all of that is the fact that we are in this competition with China. And like, if we don't figure some of these things out, that puts us on a lot worse footing in this global competition. And on that note, that's where I actually do have a question for Amit. Karp, obviously outspoken on this topic for a long time. He is, I don't know how much he's associated in the minds of your audience with what Elon is doing, what Doge is doing, what Trump is doing, but Palantir has been a huge component of trying to make the United States government more efficient and more effective. Like, that's kind of the whole purpose of Palantir. So what kind of commentary are you seeing, hearing from your audience? Like, are there more people who are being polarized around the Palantir story because of the political environment right now? Or how does Alex Karp mirror, or is he different from the commentary you're hearing around Elon right now?
Well, I think people are excited for Palantir because they think Doge can create more contracts for the company to get, which I think is very possible given Doge is focused on efficiency. Palantir is an operating system. You got Peter Thiel, JD Vance, David Sachs, a lot of people that have Palantir connections. So that could obviously be very beneficial from a monetary perspective. Elon and Alex have a little bit of a bromance going on, and they're talking back and forth on Twitter, and Elon's publicly praising him, reposting his video. So I think that's exciting. I do think there's a decent number of Palantir investors that still don't like Elon, right? It's not every Palantir investor, but they like Palantir, but then they don't like Elon. And so they're kind of stuck in their, it's like bubbles, but they're trying to get out of these bubbles to kind of embrace Elon, but they really don't like him. So they kind of don't know how to navigate it. So it's a weird time for a lot of people, but the far majority of Palantir investors like that Elon and Karp are having a good relationship. And maybe it results in something positive for the company with Doge contracts. But even if it doesn't, Karp wrote about Elon in his latest book, and he basically said, bench players talking like starters. I hate it. You know, like, Elon's trying. All the rest of you are complaining. None of you have built anything of significance ever. And you have the audacity to complain about someone who's trying to resolve our deficit. And I would agree with that take. I mean, like, how could you blame someone for trying, even if they're not successful? And there's a good shot Elon's going to be successful at this.
Yeah. Do you think the next 4 years are a watershed moment for Palantir to really start becoming a true force on the scale of like a Max 7? Like, do you see Max 7 potential for Palantir in the next 4 years?
Well, the Max 7s are doing like a couple hundred billion of revenue. I don't see that, to be honest. I mean, I think in my interpretation of Palantir's recent 30% decline is that it was probably healthy. I mean, Palantir was approaching a $300 billion market cap at 125. It's just like some of those levels are not sustainable. So I don't know if Palantir will be able to grow 40, 50% every single year. I think they can definitely grow 35% this year with the slight chance of 40%. But to compound at 50, 60, 70% to get to the point where they're doing hundreds of billions of revenue, I think it could happen one day, maybe a couple decades from now. But in the next 4 or 5 years, I don't know if they necessarily get there. However, the narrative around Palantir, the momentum, the hype, the fact that people are willing to pay a premium for the stock simply because that their AI operating system is fundamentally differentiated from the rest of the pack, and they are growing better than every other AI name at 36%. To me, that is significant, and that will justify a premium. Could that premium put them in the conversation with the Mag 7 from just like a marketing perspective? Yeah, their name's going to be up there with NVIDIA, Google, Microsoft, et cetera. In terms of the actual growth, will they be able to put up $400 billion of revenue? I don't know. That's going to be a bit tough. But I think the brand is growing dramatically, and that's why people are more excited to learn about the company.
Yeah. I think if I view the current administration, the one thing that they've been willing to do is really, it seems like they're modernizing their approach to partnering with businesses that are state-of-the-art at what they do. I don't think that the government has been good at doing that before. I think the government before is, which person do I know within the bureaucracy that has ties to a thing that I can use them for, where I can get a little bit of something in the back end? That feels to me like the old way of doing business in government, whereas now it's like, okay, you know, $36 trillion in debt, some fundamentally broken stuff about our foundation. You have China ramping up massively. You have them probably going to move on Taiwan sometime this decade, and you have a lot of imbalance on the global order. Like, there's a lot of hectic stuff going on, and we have our problems internally. We need to stop dilly-dallying, and we need to like actually get with the people who know what the fuck they're doing. And I think that's one of the main reasons why MAGA and sort of like big tech, like cutting edge tech, have come together, because there's an agreement that says, okay, this is how we're going to move forward from now on. We're going to shed your Boeings, we're going to shed your Lockheed's, we're going to shed these old school guys that have been around forever, and we're going to bring in the new guys that understand where we're going the next 20 years, the ones that have their hands around artificial intelligence and automation and robotics and how that's going to allow us to move forward. Because if we don't do that, somebody else will, i.e. China, and then they win. And are we sure we want a world where China wins, right? That's, I think that's at the core of every argument. I think it all boils down to that. And I think you've hit a really good point there. It's like, if not us, then China. And are we sure we want China? Are we sure we want a communist country? Chinese people are amazing. I love the people, right? And I'm sure a lot of them are very happy. But as Americans, as people who at least feel like we have freedom, right? Are we sure we want the image of the world to be driven by China and not the United States? That's what it comes down to, right?
I would agree.
Yeah,
I would agree.
And then I can see your frustration. There. You're like, how can somebody be against this?
Dude, but then I think as content creators, we got to realize we're talking to such a wide, diverse group of people. And like, yeah, you got people that are just totally like, there are people that care about Palantir and found me because of Palantir, but you kind of wonder, like, their politics are so diametrically opposed to like the average Palantirian. And so it's like, you realize people are diverse. They have different perspectives. They could like Palantir the company, but they could also really hate a lot of the other stuff that a typical Palantir investor would care about politically. So I guess it's just trying to figure out how to communicate as effectively as we can. And thankfully, we've got a platform that allows us to do it freely, which I'm still a fan of, and I think will be worth a lot more than $44
billion. Yeah.
But I guess we'll find out.
And I think YouTube is starting to loosen up as well as a result of that, which is a wonderful thing. Props to YouTube for doing that too. It's the golden 100%. Age of content, without a shadow of a doubt. That's why Elon should go on Daily Show. That's why Trump
should go on Bill Maher. It would break the internet if he does
that. Yeah. It would be groundbreaking, you know?
Would you reach out to the Daily Show's producers and show them your tweet? I mean, like, they have had to see
it. I'm sure they've seen it. I don't even think I need to do that. I tagged them on both. I think my post got, I don't know. Let me see how many.
Like, there's no way the Daily Show would not want Elon to come on.
If they don't, that says more about them than it says Elon. At which point, Elon would be right in saying, like, hey, they're kind of extreme left. I'm like, I don't know. But if they don't have him on, there's like, okay, then maybe he's right. 100,000 people, nearly 100,000 people have seen the post.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if
they have. Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to hit?
No.
No. Good. Hans?
Let's just hope NVIDIA earnings are good today for everybody.
Okay, what do you think? Cool. What are you expecting?
I think they'll go up. That's it. That's my expectation.
Go up?
I think number.
I was actually just looking at an interesting chart that Gavin Baker shared on X, and it's looking at a percentage of minutes in an hour that are available for all the H100 clusters that are, you know, in the cloud. And ever since DeepSeek R1, it's been trending down. It was like, you know, up above 50% before R1 was released. So lots of free time, and it's been trending down. It reached as low as 15%, but it looks like it's not stopping. So
50% all that to be said, time?
Yeah. and now we're looking at down to 15% free time. So demand for H100 compute, you know, is on the rise, and then the other, you know, some of the other variants as well. So A100's also seeing a spike in demand. So people are training more models. Looks like Jevons paradox might be holding. And, you know, I don't know what this quarter holds for NVIDIA, but I am friggin' impressed with with Jensen Huang. Like, he is
unbelievable. One
of the best CEOs out there. But, and then I guess also I am very impressed with Satya. Like, I think his willingness to pivot here this last week and say, okay, we're going to focus not on pre-training compute, we're going to start focusing our build out on inference compute. Very bold move for someone. Like, he's the only hyperscaler to be willing to aggressively abandon pre-training in favor of inference. That's fucking insane.
So you're telling me that when something is 95% cheaper to run, demand goes up? No way.
Seems so.
Oh my god, I'm so shocked. You telling me something that's groundbreaking that can do something a human can a million times faster, that's 95 cheaper now, is going to go up the demand? No way. All right. You know what this whole thing tells me? OpenAI is so cooked. They're cooked.
Yeah, I don't know what that... Dude, I've been using Grok 3 for the past 2 weeks.
It's How good is it?
It's like, I mean, I was just using it before I went on with you guys. It's good, dude.
Yeah.
It's really fucking good. Like, people have to use it to really understand and give it complex questions and reason with it. And it's just, it's unbelievable.
It's very natural. It feels like the post I made was like, it feels alive. OpenAI feels robotic. The other ones feel very robotic. Like, and I don't know. They haven't even posted the model with the 200,000 GPUs, right? This is the 100,000 GPU version.
Yep.
So they're about to double compute, and then they're on the path.
It's hard to say, how much the 200,000 GPUs were involved in the training of H100 or of Grok 3. But what we do know is that, you know, they're continuing, like, they didn't stop at 200,000, like, they're continuing to grow. And so they have more compute, you know, literally every month they have more compute than they did last month. And then you're multiplying, you know, the amount of compute times time. So like in a month, they have done more training hours by GPU than they did in the previous month. So it's just like they're exponentially growing the amount of supercomputer thinking time that has gone into developing these models. And it just gets better and better and better, faster and faster and faster. So yeah, like it's just insane what Elon has been able to accomplish. And this is why I think Satya said, you know what? We're like, we had, you know, an advantage in pre-training with OpenAI for a long time, but that advantage is gone. Like, as soon as XAI crosses this point, there's never going to be an advantage that we can gain with OpenAI in pre-training ever again. We're not going to waste any money on that. We're just going to let everyone else do all the hard pre-training work, and we're going to work on making our compute be great at inferring amazing models and serving them up to customers in valuable ways. We're going to integrate them into our products, and we're going to have all the infrastructure around that to make it work. You know, I just don't know how anyone else is going to compete with XAI in the pre-training realm. And inference is going to be downstream of, like, the smarter your pre-trained model is, the better everything on the inference side gets. So, yeah, it's nuts.
How much business does NVIDIA do in inference compute?
I don't know, but data center revenue tends to be like 80 to 90% of the business. Like, I think they're going to do $36 billion this quarter on data center.
Okay.
And it is also the inference might be a certain percentage of that as well, but it's a good chunk that should grow in demand, right?
I mean, historically, they've definitely, or historically being the last couple of years, it's been, you know, most of their A100, H100 sales have been for pre-training data centers. But I guess we know that Meta said they had 400,000 roughly H100s. And I think they're, you know, any one pre-training cluster would have been about 30. And maybe they had a couple of those. So probably split maybe 30% in pre-training and 70% in just like rough napkin math numbers.
Why don't we just ask Grok? What are we doing?
That is a good question. Yeah.
What percentage of NVIDIA's total business?
I mean, ultimately, inference is far and away going to be where most of the compute ends up being. It just doesn't have to be, you know, all in one place and one huge connected cluster. It can be all around the world. It can be a lot smaller. And but that's going to be at least 5-10 times bigger.
Yeah. Grok says over 30, time. 35% inference.
Wow.
Yeah. So then there's a opportunity to double the business again.
Yeah. I mean, they have a lot more competition in inference. You know, their advantages really are most strong in pre-training.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a lot easier to compete with their hardware for inference specifically.
Okay. Wild times. Yep. Wild times. Anything else?
I'm very excited for this market, very excited for Elon, very excited for Doge, and very excited for you guys covering the story. You guys are going to be the Walter Isaacsons of our time, not through a book, but like through day-to-day shaping the narrative, you know? Like it's a big responsibility. It matters.
I think, you know, that's why I have so much respect for what Walter does. And he agreed to come on the channel at some point in the future too. Again, sort of recap the stuff that we've talked about with like the Elon story arc. It's the ultimate goal here is to try to be as objective as possible with what's going on. And we're not going to be perfect. And we are biased. But I think we're trying our hardest to just present what is happening. Just present what is happening. Try to give our observations. And then people should go take that. And then if they're interested, go look at the other sides. Go look at whatever side. You know, see what's going on. That's the goal. I don't know if we're doing well or poorly with that, but that's the goal. That's the goal. So we'll see where it goes. And obviously the work you're doing, dude, your channel, you're getting, I remember last year you were getting like 1,000 or something live viewers. Now you're getting like 4,000 or 5,000 live viewers. It seems like, yeah, for your live stream. How does that feel?
It's been cool, dude. It's been fun, but it is a big responsibility because now you're noticing, like, you know, when you say something, 5,000 people at one moment are listening, and it's like, you have to really, this is what it is about being a content creator, right? Like, can you manage that many people all at once? And can you give them a reason to keep coming back and actually provide value? So it is what it is, but it's exciting every day to do it, you know?
Yeah, dude, the machine. Every day, you're on that shit multiple times a day. How do you sleep?
I just tell myself that this is the time to grind, right? You're, you know, 27, trying to build a real brand, like go for it. I mean, I'm not out there doing hard labor in the real world. So it's like, can I really complain? Obviously, intellectual labor is different from hard labor, but I get to be in my house. I mean, like, there's so many things you're grateful for that you just want to not take the opportunity for granted, you know?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I think your success speaks for itself. And my gut tells me that this is still just the beginning. I think you are going to be one of the biggest voices in this like space of like finance, tech, business, this marriage. I think you'll be a top 10 voice by the end of the decade globally. That's what my gut tells me.
Just gotta keep working, baby.
Yeah.
Gotta keep working.
Me. Where can people find this incredible journey that you're on, Amit? Tell them.
At Amit is Investing on X. And yeah. I go, YouTube's in my X bio, so you guys can check me out there as well.
Perfect. Thanks, dude.
Awesome stuff. Record. See you guys next month.
Hell yeah. Monthly. That's right. We're doing this monthly. Come back again here next month.